Hello, I'm Matt Baum, and welcome to The Sewers of Paris. We're on a podcast search for the entertainment that changed the lives of queer people. On tonight's episode, Pink Narcissus, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and Gem and the Holograms. 51 years ago this month, a strange and beautiful art film called Pink Narcissus had its San Francisco debut, and it went on to forever change the life of my guest, Ian McKinnon. I spoke to Ian back in 2015, and this week we're revisiting that interview to mark the half-century birthday of one of his favorite films. Growing up in the Midwest, Ian couldn't even picture what life as a gay man would look like, and he certainly couldn't have pictured what his life would become, parading up on stages as a performance artist covered in brightly colored phallic objects, shouting triumphantly in one-man shows about the pride that he takes in being a sexual gay being. We'll have that conversation in a minute. First, a reminder that I've got a book coming out in 2023. It's all about how subversive queer comedy transformed the American sitcom over the last half century, and I'll be revealing the title and cover of the book next week in my weekly newsletter. Head over to gaysitcoms.com to subscribe and be the first to get the details and to pre-order your copy. That's at gaysitcoms.com. Also, big thanks to everyone who supports The Sewers of Paris on Patreon. Patrons get hours of exclusive bonus videos about pop culture history, stickers and stuff in the mail, and shoutouts in YouTube videos. Now, here's my 2015 interview with Ian. So, hi, welcome. I'm Matt Baum. Today we've got the fabulous Ian McKinnon.
Hi.
Ian is a fabulous performance artist in LA who does some amazing shows. They're beautiful and obscene and thought-provoking and wonderful. I don't think I've ever been to one of your shows where you did not have the audience up on their feet at some point. So tell me a little bit about what it is you do. Describe your shows to me.
I do a bunch of different kinds of shows. I do solo performance shows, which recently have been about gay history and about my fetish for gay history. And I take these sort of erotic time-traveling adventures through homo history, cruising different gay icons and learning about them and making love to them. And that's pretty fun.
I create a brand new invention, one that will revolutionize performance art and take us into the next century. It's a cybersexual, multimedia, computerized masturbation time machine.
Who are the icons?
Yeah. It's a four-part series that I've done. I deal with Walt Whitman and Carl Heinrich Ulrichs. He was kind of the first person that I dealt with.
Who is that?
He was the first icon that I learned. He is a German lawyer from the 1860s. He is sometimes called the grandfather of the gay rights movement.
Okay.
He wrote books and about... Well, what he called Uranians, the term gay and homosexual wasn't created yet. So he called us Uranians. So he wrote books about Uranian rights and they were banned. And then he sued and the ban was reversed. And so he marked that as the beginning of a modern rights movement.
Why did he call us Uranians?
Oh, it comes from Plato's Symposium.
Okay.
Where Plato is talking about different kinds of love.
Hmm.
And he says there's two kinds of Aphrodite, two different kinds of goddesses of love. One is Aphrodite Dione, and then there's the goddess Aphrodite Urania, who is the goddess of heavenly love.
Hmm.
And she creates children of the mind, like art and democracy and culture.
Hmm.
And so you could see it as like the goddess of hetero love that breeds children. And then, you know, when two gay guys get together and make love, you know, what's born is typically inspiration of some kind, or, you know, possibly. So he took Urania and it became Uranian.
I see. Okay. So no.
And called us Uranians, as if we're the ones who are ruled by that goddess.
Okay.
Our love is ruled by the goddess Aphrodite Urania. People want to say that there's no difference between gay and straight. It's just, you know, I just want to have sex with a guy. I'm just like any other straight guy. It's like, no, there's, you know, it's like different.
We have different Greek gods.
Different kind of loves. Yeah, exactly.
So of all the historical figures that you have in your show and that you're traveling through time and through history having sex with them, who's the sexiest?
Oh, gosh. That's hard to answer. I mean, Carl is definitely one of the sexiest sections. It was the first one I did. And I feel actually was the first one I felt like a true sort of sexual passion for just reading his work. I just would get turned on reading it. And I was like, oh, my God, this stuff from the 1860s is still relevant. It's still like actually ahead of where we are. You know, he talked about it like fulfilling our following the dictates of our orientation is our sole responsibility in life.
Hmm. So is it very sexy? Like, is he describing things explicitly, or what makes it so hot?
No, it's a sexual turn on. It's like a mental turn on for me. It's like a gay liberation turn on. Like, he's so, to me, powerful in his writing that I suddenly was like, oh, this guy would be so hot. Like, oh, and also thinking like, oh, he's a real person. Like, history leaves out what's below the belt a lot. You know, when you learn about it, it's like, no, but these people had dicks and they got hard and, you know, they had orgasms. And, you know, if he were alive today, I would be like totally hot for this guy, you know? So it's kind of like that.
So this is sort of like a fantasy fulfillment of getting to meet this guy who, if only your paths had been able to cross. When was it, like 1800s?
Right. Yeah, 1860s. Yeah. I mean, it would have been a really terrible time to be gay and really oppressive and horrible. And eventually Carl did have to leave and was exiled. But he was the first person to speak out publicly for gay rights in the modern age. And so, yeah, that makes him sexy. You know, I did Walt Whitman, and there's a Percy Shelley section that was kind of fun in the last show. I'm trying to think what else have been some hot sections. There's a Sufi mystic section that we did with Rumi and Abu Nuwas, and some of their poetry is so
I don't know
so
anything about that.
And gay and wonderful. Yeah, oh, you should look it up. Okay. There's a fabulous book called Gay Mystics that's really cheap on Amazon that's worth getting.
Awesome. Anyway. Well, so what made you gravitate towards history?
I think it's the power that I feel from like learning about it. Like, the cat's like scratching in the cat box. I mean, there's a lot of reasons that history is interesting to me. Should I just wait for that to happen?
Sure.
And cut it. She's so loud. Hey, honey, come on. That's enough. There she comes. Okay. So what attracted me to gay history is a number of things. I mean, my father was a historian. Hmm. Both my parents majored in history. So it was kind of around. And my father taught U.S. history and anthropology and archaeology when I was a kid. And was sort of like into society for creative anachronism and the Ren Fair, like dressing up in the period, experiencing the period.
Would you do all that stuff? Would you do that like as a family? Would you like do like the Ren Fair kind of stuff like together?
Yeah. I mean, my mother, I don't remember her going, but he would take a student group that he had. Yeah, I was a Ren Fair kid. I would, you know, it was like a Renaissance Scottish Celtic dance group.
Wow.
So we go and like, you know, wear kilts and stuff and do basically like, you know, Highland dancing and square dancing. It's kind of like square dancing that, you know, obviously makes an impression, but history in school wasn't interesting very much at all to me, you know, just like theater and psychology was all that was really interesting. So I guess it was really through doing this gay-centered psychological work, you know, like reading Plato's Symposium, learning about some of the gay pioneers that I started to be like, oh, history is sexy and exciting. And I think the gay liberation power that's there is enticing to me, it alluring. I grew up in Wisconsin in a little conservative suburb of Madison, and there was like no access to anything gay. Mm-hmm. So in a way it was like, could have been like the 30s or 40s or something, you know, like it just, I didn't like the first image I ever had of, I remember there was this some movie called Doing Time on Maple Drive.
Okay.
Do you remember that?
I've never heard of that.
It was on TV.
Okay.
Super depressing. Jim Carrey's in it.
Oh.
It's like this depressing story. He plays an alcoholic. I was so little, and it was like, finally, you know, someone gay was going to be on TV, like in the TV guide, you know, it said it. So it was like that. So
what is the, does he play like a sad gay man living in the suburbs?
No, he plays the brother. He plays an alcoholic brother of a really hot, I forget the actor's name. He's famous. He's really sexy. I guess I barely remember it. It was super depressing. He's like out at college, but comes home and is in the closet. And then maybe he almost kills himself in a car wreck.
Okay.
And then they all like cry and struggle with his homosexuality. Like, it's really dark, as I remember.
So that's what gay looked,
you know,
like.
90s.
Yeah.
You want me to say it, Mom? I didn't swerve to avoid hitting a dog. I swerved to avoid living this life. So if it'd be better to be dead,
all right,
I'm gonna tell you that. No, you haven't, Mom! No, you haven't. I tried to kill myself.
No, you didn't. You had an accident.
No! 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 I thought it'd be better to be dead.
No!
Mom! I thought it'd be better to be dead than
No,
yes! Than to tell you I was gay!
Yeah, that was one image of like, oh my God. And, you know, and even it was so hard to imagine what gay looked like, what it was. Like, I remember imagining like having a boyfriend and I would live downtown in an apartment with cupboards. Like, I just couldn't really envision much, you know? And I think learning about gay history, it like really expands my gay vision, like even beyond modern context of what gay means. Maybe I think, you know, looking at the ancient world, which some people have a problem claiming Plato and anyone before the 1860s as gay, which I just think is bullshit. I mean, you know, whether or not words are invented or not, you know, two guys want to fuck and that's gay. So, you know, from the dawn of humanity, in my opinion.
So how old were you when you were learning about Plato?
That's a good question. Early 20s, I guess. It, you know, one highlight of it is that the whole section that Hedwig lifted for the Origin of Love song, about the round people who are cut in half. And there's three different ones, two women, two men, and a man and a woman.
Yeah, I totally forgot that thing from Hedwig and the Angry Inch is based on the Symposium. Right? Do I have that right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's totally right.
And then he grabbed up some bolts. He let out a laugh. Said, I'll split them right down the middle. Gonna cut them right up in half. Hear the storm clouds gathered above.
So the little young you growing up in Wisconsin, like 9-year-old Ian, imagining like this life where you're living downtown with cupboards, what would you think of the life? What would young you think of the life that you're living now?
Oh my gosh, I don't think he'd be able to understand it. But he'd probably be really attracted to it, like a lure, you know, like, oh, this looks cool.
Did you model yourself like when you were learning about these gay figures? Because you said it gives you this power. It sounds like knowing about what gay people were at different times and in different places kind of suggests to you what you yourself could be. It presents options. Did you find yourself like modeling your lives on the people you were learning about?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, I think it's helped me get more grounded and feisty, more solid about ideas around gayness. I mean, no one's taught, you know, I went through how many fucking years of school and no one told me anything about the gay liberation movement. Mm-hmm. No one told me anything about gay soul or gay spirit or gay identity. It's like completely hidden. So in a way, we're like retarded thinking about it. I mean, I don't mean that in a derogatory way. I mean, like, our development has been delayed around like even understanding and gay liberation is relatively so young, you know, in the modern sense, if you start from Stonewall or something. So to me, it seems like we're just beginning to understand what it means to be gay, what our purpose is, what that is. And still homophobia is like encroaching on every side, including internally the homophobia we've internalized growing up in a homophobic world. And that's what's so powerful about being gay, I think, is that like we're like all this crap is crammed down our throats when we're like developing, when we're babies and can't help but like internalize everything. Yet something inside us, separate from all of that, comes up and says, you know, fuck you, I'm gay, I'm coming out of the closet. And that's powerful. So I always want to like where's that more? Like how can we keep using that energy to transcend and you know, heteronormativity and become more homosexual?
So when did that energy kind of find you? Like when, at what point were you like, all right, this is it, I'm coming out?
Oh, well, I would have done it at 15 if the world, you know, if the world hadn't been, you know, if I hadn't been so scared.
What were you scared of?
14, 15. I was, well, I mean, kids were already calling me faggot in third grade. That was like an everyday occurrence from basically third grade to 12th grade. Mm-hmm. So while it was true, all I needed was someone to say like, oh yeah, you are. And it's awesome. I just thought I had to hide it. And I was just scared of being abandoned, scared of, you know, didn't quite make sense. And then eventually I was like, oh wait, okay. I'll get out of here. Like I can like, you know, when I'm 18, I'll leave. Yeah. Like 17, 18, I started coming out to friends.
Okay.
And then in college came out.
What prompted that? And so how far away did you go to college?
Oh, I went to college in Dallas, Texas.
Oh, okay.
I went from one crazy conservative place to another really fucking, it's probably even a worse, you know, conservative place. Madison, at least, was nearby Monona and had a liberal side to it. Mm-hmm. You know, Dallas is like new money conservative. You know, I went to school with the same kids basically from kindergarten to 12th grade. Mm-hmm. So.
Did you reinvent yourself?
It was great to like, Yeah. Well, yes and no. I think I just blossomed. I was in an art, you know, I was in a theater program, and it just suddenly felt like I could, you know, it was safe, and kids thought I was cool for like the weird clothes I wore and how I was, music I liked and stuff. I remember this girl, Jen Saposi, was like, we were driving back from like, I think the gay bar had like an 18 and up night and we had all gone. And she was like, she turned to me in the car and she's like, I'm bisexual. What are you? And I was like, oh, you know, bisexual. And then probably like, I don't even know. A couple weeks later, I was at this party and this dancer boy kissed me, you know, and took me home and made out in his car. And then it was like, I'm out. I'm just fucking out. I'm gay. This is awesome. I made out with a boy in a car. He was cute. This is, you know, cool. So yeah, like freshman year in the dorms, this guy who was a senior, you know, once I cut my hair or whatever, was like interested. So he like came to my dorm room window, knocked on the dorm window, like crawled in my window and, under the pretense of watching Noises Off, which I think we watched for like 3 minutes. We didn't watch it. We just had sex.
Yeah, so you know,
I didn't watch it. I was losing my virginity. So I've never really seen that movie. So that this was all an amazing time for me of like sort of like having these experiences, like finally getting fucked. And then the next day I flew to New York City to visit my cousin who was living in Manhattan. And it was just like New York was just like alive with hot men everywhere on the street, smiling and being friendly. And I, you know, it was like this whole, finally the world was like opening up.
And you just had like this, it was like the first time that you had slept with a guy. So it must have felt like.
Yeah, basically.
All of this had just opened up to you.
Yeah.
Who was the guy?
He was a senior in the acting class, but I guess he had taken the semester off or something. The first time I saw him, he was go-go dancing at Club One, which was like one of the crazier clubs in Deep Ellum in Dallas. And I just thought he was so beautiful. I couldn't believe it. And then when he was interested in me, I couldn't believe that either, that someone's, you know, so beautiful would be interested. And, you know, I think we had a thing for like a week or something like that. It was really nice.
Oh, that's lovely. And then the very next day you're there in the middle of like the huge gay city with everything open, you know, opening up to you.
Yeah, I know. And like gay plays, I went and saw this play called The Party, which was like play about gay men having a party and getting naked. You know, it was like they all got naked in the play. And that was like amazing to see. And I think I saw Bus Stop too. What's her name? Mary Louise Parker. But my cousin worked all day, so I was just like, you know, there with the paper and stuff. And so I saw that this movie, The Celluloid Closet, was playing down in the Village. So yeah, I totally like got a train down there, and she was on the Upper West Side, and saw a matinee of that movie, and it was amazing. That it made like a huge impact, you know. And it's also about gay history. It's about the hidden history of homosexuals in film.
The documentary.
Yeah, yeah, and based on the Vito Russo book.
Out of the Closet.
You queer.
Hell no, sir.
Go right ahead, boys. Don't mind me.
And onto the silver screen.
Men. Oh, you don't have to worry about that. We wouldn't be caught dead with men.
The Celluloid Closet.
Rough, hairy beast.
Yeah, I was there. I went by myself, and it was like the middle of the day. Yeah, I remember like, you know, looking at all the men who were there. There weren't that many people in the theater. I feel like only like 15 people were at the 20 people were at this movie. This is like probably 1 o'clock in the afternoon or something. It's hard to remember. I think I cried. I remember crying and feeling like, you know, like, oh, I'm in a room with like gay people. like, you know, maybe everyone in this room, you know, could be gay or something.
Did it change the way that you looked at those old movies and old characters?
Oh, totally. Totally. I feel like I kind of confirmed suspicions I had about things. Like, oh, that is a gay, like a veiled gay character. Like, oh, no wonder I've always sort of like been interested in that kind of, you know, villains and stuff. Or
life's not fair, is it? You see, I shall never be king. And you shall never see the light of another day. Adieu.
Like, I remember the movie deals with like the sissy and sissies in film, and whether or not that's like a sort of a Sambo kind of character portrayal, or whether or not it's, you know, visibility is important. And I think it just started like wheels turning and thinking about all these things. Like, oh, there's a sissy. There's like a type called a sissy. And
did you feel like you were discovering like gay types that resonated with you? Like, were there, you know, whether it was the sissy or something else, where you're like, oh, that's the kind of gay that I am?
Oh, I don't know.
Or were there characters or figures that you were like, oh, I really identify with this either fictitious person or this real person in history?
Yeah, I mean, certainly gay. There's some gay artists that I identify with or I like or I'm inspired by. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, as far as a type, I guess I'm like a gay artsy type or something, which I feel like doesn't, get portrayed a lot, or maybe, I don't know.
I'm trying to think of movies that have, you know, like the experimental choreographer or something.
Yeah.
No matter what you do on the stage, keep it light, keep it bright, keep it gay. Whether it's murder, mayhem, or rage, don't complain. It's a pain. Keep it gay.
And so you're in college at this time. Is that around the time that you started doing more, like, concentrating your performance on gay historical figures, or was it later that you started making that?
Yeah, it was like towards the end of college. I took a class where you could like research whatever you wanted mm-hmm. about theater and then teach the class what you had researched. The professor was kind of brilliant in a way. He just let us teach it. But so I was like, oh, I'm going to look up performance art because it's creatively free, you know, where I don't have to say Chekhov's words or something like that or do what the director says. I can do what I want. So in reading up on performance art, the work of Tim Miller and Holly Hughes comes up a lot in gay performance art, especially. And their work was like really attractive to me because it's all based on personal experience. And so when I started getting into that, I just kept snowballing of like, oh, this is so interesting. I want to do it. I want to try it. And then Tim Miller came to Houston. So I drove down to see his show twice. And once I had made that connection with him, and then he came to my university the next year to teach through this professor he knew who was also teaching about performance art. So it all kind of like blossomed there. And then he was like, oh, you should come to LA and do it. So I did my first piece with an independent study with that professor, Rhonda Blair, who's really a wonderful woman. And it was about gay history, basically. There's that idea, ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny. What is it? The development of the fetus mirrors human
the evolution of the species. Yeah,
right. Exactly. Like the whole species evolved the way we individually evolve. So I was like, okay, what if like my personal evolution of coming out mirrors, you know, the gay liberation movement. So I took moments from each and kind of tied them together. And it was cool. It worked. And so strangely, you know, history was like there from the beginning of, you know, my first solo piece.
Right. Yeah. And not to mention, like, I'm sure you were surrounded by it when you were growing up. Mm-hmm. You know, it sounds like as a kid, that's sort of how you connected to things before you needed to connect to being gay, that, you know, it's just you had a lot of history and heritage all around you at all times.
Yeah, it's true.
So you had that show, and is that what brought you to Los Angeles?
Yeah, Tim brought me to Los Angeles. Well, I got a summer stock job in Santa Maria and Solvang, which is that little Dutch town up the coast.
Yeah,
for the summer, and so then it just seemed to make sense. Like, well, if I'm already going to California for this job, I might as well try out LA and take Tim's advice. And so, yeah, I came to LA and I started working at Highways Performance Space in Santa Monica, just doing little nights, little short pieces. And then that slowly grew into longer pieces. And then I had a boyfriend at the time and we did a duet piece together, which was about how our relationships with our fathers mirror, you know, how that all mirrors each other.
So I remember you mentioning that Pink Narcissus was an important film for you. So when did you discover that?
I guess I saw it. Well, I first saw images from it on postcards in gay bookstores. The stills that James Bigood, I guess, took, and his imagery. It's just like so sexy and beautiful, and the colors are like technicolor, psychedelic.
And it's kind of a hard thing to describe exactly what it is. It's a feature, basically. It's like feature length.
Oh yeah, the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw the movie after I saw the pictures. It is hard to describe. I mean, it's like kind of pornography. I mean, I guess I call it a gay spirit art film.
Mm-hmm.
or an erotic art film.
And so what are you looking at, like, when you're watching the movie?
Tommy Kendall's sexy body. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess the whole thing is like a dream. I mean, it's hard to know what it's about. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's a hustler who's daydreaming in his apartment, all these various fantasies.
And we're just sort of like watching this boy like in various settings and sort of these like dreamscapes, and there's all this color everywhere, not a lot of clothing.
Really beautiful costumes. Yeah, mm-hmm. the clothing is like very skimpy or tight, and you know, has a really gay cut to it. Mm-hmm. You know, like all the clothes are just scream gay.
Uh-huh. So you saw the postcards for it, and then at some point you actually got to see the film.
Yeah. I saw the film, and it took a while to get through it because I would just masturbate, you know, and then have to, you know, pause it and then start it later. But I saw it, and I guess to me it's just like, to me, Pink Narcissus is just kind of infinitely inspiring. Mm. And I think it's a really, it's like one of those crowning achievement artworks, mm-hmm. for me, like a Mona Lisa or something, like a masterpiece. It's a masterpiece. Because it's so gay, it's existing in this like gay dream, and it's full of sexuality that doesn't come off like homophobic. You know, for its time, it's interestingly, you know, like the guy doesn't kill himself at the end, you know.
Right, there's no tragic
most gay movies. Right, yeah, right, or, you know, is all alone or something. It's just sumptuous and mm-hmm. beautiful, and you just sort of exist in like, you know, this numinous, yummy gay spirit. It just, for me, it's like what the feelings it evokes for me, the turn on, the wonder. I mean, it's also, he made the entire film in his apartment, I believe, except for maybe some of the city scenes were shot like in a warehouse or something. It also has Charles Ludlam in it, which is really awesome. He's one of my theater heroes.
I don't know who that is.
He's one of the pioneers of the theater of the ridiculous.
Okay.
In New York City. He's just one of the great geniuses of the theater.
Mm-hmm.
But he's in it and he's hilarious. He's like, he's in Pink Narcissus pushing this, like cart with dildos. He's like selling dildos. He seems very physical and, you know, maybe high camp or something.
So have you brought this to other people? Have you showed Pink Narcissus to folks?
Oh yeah. We did a show called Gay May Days a couple years ago. My friend Jason Jen and I curated it. And it was like a bunch of performances. The first night was all artists performing about icons from gay history that were important to them. And then the second night took on sort of a more pagan, nature worshiping, you know, celebrate the spring tone that ended with a maypole dance. And then after both nights, we showed films and it had like a little snuggle pit in the front. And people could get cuddly and watch. So yeah, we showed Pink Narcissus, which I think people really dug. I'm always surprised at how people haven't seen it, or like, oh, I've seen these images or something, but hadn't seen the film. I mean, it's kind of a slow film, which I guess is partly what I like about it. It really luxuriates in the feelings of gay spirit and in the sort of visual opulence of it. I mean, it's just like jewels and gold and butts and giant penises and lamé and water and fabric. It's just so, you know, in fantasies, you know, there's even that gritty scene where they're pissing at the urinals and, you know, maybe he's being drowned in a bathtub of milk or something. It's really, yeah, archetypal gay images.
Yeah. You mentioned gay spirit. Like, what does that mean to you?
I guess it's like sort of a mystery. I mean, I feel like I know gay spirit when I feel it.
Mm.
It's like a warmth or an uplifting feeling. I mean, I don't think it's just one thing. It's like the fire that fuels gay liberation. It's like when your dick gets really hard, there's gay spirit there.
Mm.
You know, when you feel that turn on from another guy, that's gay spirit. I think the rage against the heteronormative world, the rage of ACT UP, you know, when people were laying in the streets, that's gay spirit. I think it's about, it's fire, it's passion, it's life force.
It's definitely what you're describing is what you evoke when you're doing your show. Like a lot of your shows, you open with this thing called the gay activist workout.
Oh yeah. Planet Queer. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Which is like, Well, it's kind of like an aerobics routine. It's like Jane Fonda meets like ACT UP maybe or something. I was never a part of ACT UP. Again, it's just things I've read about. Yeah, the gay activist workout. Well, the idea is that, like, you know, everyone's coming to Planet Queer to this evening. It's like a experimental LGBT performance night that we do at ACBAR on the third Monday of the month. And so people come, and it's like, for me, I think, like, oh, we've just spent all day in the heteronormative world, like at our jobs on Monday or whatever people do on Monday. Like, it's probably not very gay. Or if you are, you're really lucky, you know? So I was thinking we were inundated with all this heteronormativity all the time. So we need like some little ritual to get our minds ready to like look at LGBT experimental performance. And so yeah, I was like, oh, we got to work out that internalized homophobia was kind of the idea. So yeah, I get the audience up on their feet. I make them do, well, I don't make them, you know, some people just sit there, but most people get up and do it. And you know, we do like kind of aerobic moves that are connected, you know, with different things of gay liberation, like we march and chant, and we visualize homophobia and punch it in the face and kill it, and we high five each other and say gays rule. And yeah, it's a nice ritual. It gets people up and moving, gets them in their bodies, shakes things up, you know, because it's so, you know, you're just going to sit in this chair like I'm watching TV or something, and it's like, no, this is about something, you know, a little more interactive, you know, try to do things in a gay way.
Yeah, you really like engage people. It's so fun. Like you run in and like you say, you're like Jane Fonda, you're like this big, like cheerful workout class instructor. And you can't not have a good time while you're doing that.
Oh, good. Yeah, I think so. Brings people together. We're all doing it together. I make them look around the room at each other and you know, make eye contact with, you know, people they think are hot. I don't know, it's just fun. It just mixes it up and, you know, connects it. A big part of Planet Queer is about, you know, being a platform for LGBT artists, but it's also about creating community and having a, you know, place where people can come and, you know, feel connected and get to know each other.
Are you still learning about gay historical figures, and are you still discovering people who inspire you?
Yeah. Right now I'm working on a show about gay music history, which is something I hadn't touched on. I'd always wanted to do a piece about, like, or I'd always wanted to do like a classical composer section because there's so many, you know, classical queens. And then a good friend of mine, or yeah, good friend of mine, Dan Collins, was like, oh, hey man, you know, I know I have all this like music knowledge at my fingertips. Like, let's meet and talk. And so we had a meeting where he just, you know, spouted out lots of sort of modern people from the glam and punk scene and, you know, 50s rock and roll, 60s stuff. And I was like, oh, this would be a really cool show to kind of like weave in like a music history stuff.
Who are some of the like recent figures who've inspired you?
I'm kind of excited about the Ma Rainey section. It's short, but she's the mother of the blues. And she has this amazing song called Prove It On Me Blues that she wrote after she was busted for having a lesbian orgy at her digs with her chorus girls. But I guess she gets off for it. And then she writes this song, like, oh, you got to prove it on me, you know.
Went out last night with a crowd of my friends. Been muffin' women, cause I don't like no men. It's true, I wear color.
In the 70s, lots of lesbian organizing was around, like, lesbian folk singing and music. So it's interesting how there's always this connection, I think, between music and liberation as well, music and revolution. Like each of the artists we're talking about, like Little Richard, he's another one I'll talk about in the 50s, who I, you know, of course I love Tutti Frutti, and, you know, I thought, you know, oh, he's so flamboyant, he must be a queen. But then when I looked him up, I mean, he, in a way, like maybe he kind of like so many greats cite him as their main influence. You know, the Beatles and Jimi Hendrix and Bob Dylan, and just so many greats cite him as their, you know, so it's like, wow, he's so influential. And that's what's interesting is like looking into it, it's like, oh, behind the scenes are these like homosexual people creating culture.
Right. And there's, you know, you'd mentioned to me last time we chatted about Peter Berlin.
Oh yeah, that was the other film we showed that night at Gay May Days. We showed Pink Narcissus one night, and then we showed We did a Peter Berlin Film Fest the next night, or maybe it was, I think it was a three, it was a 3-night thing. Anyway, the Peter Berlin films were really inspiring to people.
And tell me a little about him, like introduce me to Peter Berlin.
Well, he's really interesting too. Like another guy who like has cultivated this like completely powerful gay aesthetic. Mm-hmm. He, and there's a great documentary on him. One of his porns is called That Boy. I think it's the documentary is called That Man. Anyway, he was a porn star, but he also was known for just sort of like these, his incredible visual looks and these clothes that he would make. Mm. And very sexy, you know, sort of like Tom of Finland-esque clothes that just show everything off. Yeah, and he has two movies that are pretty amazing, Nights in Black Leather, and then That Boy, Peter Berlin, which I think he made himself, which is beautiful. It's like all classical music soundtrack and lots of nature. Nights in Black Leather is really awesome. It's like gritty, and they're both very artistic. They both have sort of that, you know, have an artistic approach to the porn, which I like.
Hmm. What draws you in? What is it about Peter Berlin that you find compelling?
There's just something really liberated about him, his sexuality. You know, it's just like he's manly and he's like empowered with it. And then I think that the films have this creative side to them. Like there's a great scene in one of them where he is being photographed and the wall is covered in photographs of himself and a mirror, and he seduces the photographer. It's just this, it's just really interesting images and, mm-hmm. and thoughts. It's like so narcissistic yet so powerful and so attractive.
Yeah. It sounds like he's got, there's the confidence is a big part of just the Peter Berlin experience.
Yeah. Plus he's happening right at that time. Like everything in that time period, that post Stonewall era is interesting to me because gay liberation is just like in the air. Mm. The climate is like, you know, alive with it. And these ideas, people are talking about it. It's new, it's fresh. I mean, I guess towards the end of the '70s, maybe it's starting to peter out and assimilationism is starting to like rise. But I guess that's what's interesting in all these people's work, Ludlum and James Bigood and Peter Berlin and Vito Russo. It's all that, you know, that activist energy.
Gay liberation comes up a lot. Do you feel as though, I don't know if this question makes sense, do you feel as though you are gay liberated?
Well, I'm trying.
What is it? What is gay
liberation? It's a process. It's a process. It's an ongoing process, mm-hmm. I think. You know, coming out is like this huge part of that. And then we're kind of dropped off at the bar or something after that, you know, and then you have to find your way. And I think that coming out's just the beginning, you know, people are like, oh, I came out, I did that. Oh, mm-hmm. la, 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 you know? And, to me, I want to keep like investing in liberating myself more, you know, looking at trauma, looking at issues, looking at my own internalized homophobia, confronting that.
What are gays liberating from?
Well, oppression. Horrible thousands and thousands of years of homophobic oppression. But if you look at history, I mean, the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages, it's fucked up. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, look at the world now too. Look at other countries, you know, in this country, we're still like raised, born into the hands of parents who see us as straight initially, unless you got some, you know, crazy, amazing parent or something who's like wishing for a gay kid. Mm-hmm. Could be, but the majority of us are like, until we come out, are treated as heterosexual. And that's damaging. It's like, it creates a residue. And I think we need liberation from that. Like, yeah, we can like have this external liberation of like, you know, we should be able to get married and all and have these rights and laws. That's all important. Sure. But I think there's like a deeper inner liberation that's like super necessary. You know, that might even say, I don't want to get married. That's a hetero thing to do. Mm-hmm. I don't want to fight unjust wars. But, you know, if gay people want to do that, you know, whatever, they can. I wouldn't call it a gay thing to do.
Are there things that the process of liberation has allowed you to do?
Yeah. I'm just, like, more functional. Like, I wouldn't be able to, I think, pull off. Like, I certainly wouldn't lead a gay activist workout if I was mired in shame about being gay. You know, I certainly wouldn't be able to run Planet Queer. You know, it's like, it also spreads, you know, that enables these other artists to think in these terms and perform and sort of blossom. We wouldn't be able to blossom the little scene that we're kind of cultivating or even be able to write the shows. I mean, that's what I noticed. Like, I also lead, Get More Gay performance workshops, where we create, you know, performance pieces around different themes and ideas. And I think about myself, you know, looking at other workshop people, like certainly in my early 20s, I wouldn't be able to have led these workshops and talked, even how I'm talking to you now about gay liberation, you know, none of that. It just doesn't come out of your mouth. You don't even think it. So for me, the gay liberation opens up my mind to be able to think in a more gay-centered way, in a broader way, in a bigger way. I just feel more capable as a person, more me, less depressed, less afraid, less ashamed, more powerful.
That's great. And it's the process. I mean, for you, everyone has that through something else. And it sounds like for you, it's been the accompaniment of those historical figures and those other like artistic, you know, the artistic gaze that kind of accompanied you on that process.
Yeah, they're definitely some of my main inspirations.
Top recommendations for folks who want to go out and discover some of that?
Oh, well, let's see. There's a great book called Homosexuality and Civilization by Lewis Crompton. It's like the textbook we all should have had in high school. So that's like a great gay history book. Yeah, and I'd say, yeah, watch Pink Narcissus. Yeah, Celluloid Closet.
Where can people find you if they're in Los Angeles or they want to see your work?
Oh, yeah. Well, we do Planet Queer at ACBAR on the third Monday of every month. I have a website, gayhistorgy.com, if you want to learn about the Gay Historgy Project. And if you find me on Facebook, Ian McKinnon, then yeah, you can tune in to, you know, all the little events that I'm doing. I do lots of events.
Fantastic. Ian, thank you so much for joining us. This has been really fascinating.
Sure, Matt.
Thanks to Ian for joining me, and thanks to you for listening, and thanks to everybody who makes The Sewers of Paris possible on Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/mattbaum to support the show and get backer rewards like stickers in the mail and patron-only bonus videos. Check out my YouTube channel for stories about pop culture. That's at youtube.com/mattbaum, and subscribe to my weekly newsletter at mattbaum.com. The theme song for The Sewers of Paris is Parisian from filmmusic.io by Kevin MacLeod of comptech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0. And until next time, croissant.